Okay, so within these broad parameters you've laid out, may I ask you some final questions about sex before we leave the subject?
Shoot.
If sex is so wonderful a part of the human experience, why do so many spiritual teachers preach abstinence? And why were so many masters apparently celibate?
For the same reason most of them have been depicted as living simply. Those who evolve to a high level of understanding bring their bodily desires into balance with their minds and souls. You are three-part beings, and most people experience themselves as a body. Even the mind is forgotten after age 30. No one reads anymore, no one writes, no one teaches, no one learns. The mind is forgotten. It is not nourished. It is not expanded. No new input, the minimum output required. The mind is not fed. It is not awakened. It is lulled, dulled. You do everything you can to disengage it. Television, movies, pulp paperbacks, whatever you do, don't think, don't think, don't think. So most people live life on a body level. Feed the body, clothe the body, give the body stuff. Most people haven't read a good book. I mean a book from which they can learn something. In years. But they can tell you the entire television schedule for the week. There's something extraordinarily sad in that. The truth is, most people don't want to have to think. They elect leaders, they support governments, they adopt religions requiring no independent thought. Make it easy for me. Tell me what to do. Most people want that. Where do I sit? When do I stand? How should I salute? When do I pay? What do you wish me to do? What are the rules? Where are my boundaries? Tell me, tell me, tell me. I'll do it. Somebody just tell me. Then they get disgusted, disillusioned. They followed all the rules. They did as they were told. What went wrong? When did it turn sour? Why did it fall apart? It fell apart the moment you abandoned your mind, the greatest creative tool you ever had. It's time to make friends with your mind again. Be a companion to it. It's felt so alone. Be a nourisher of it. It's been so starved. Some of you, a small minority, have understood that you have a body and a mind. You've treated your mind well. Still, even among those of you who honor your mind and things of the mind, few have learned to use the mind at more than one-tenth its capacity. If you knew of what your mind is capable, you would never cease to partake of its wonders and its powers. And if you think the number of you who balance your life between your body and your mind is small, the number who see yourselves as three-part beings, body, mind, and spirit, is minuscule. Yet you are three-part beings. You are more than your body and more than a body with a mind. Are you nurturing your soul? Are you even noticing it? Are you healing it or hurting it? Are you growing or withering? Are you expanding or contracting? Is your soul as lonely as your mind? Is it even more neglected? And when was the last time you felt your soul being expressed? When was the last time you cried with joy, wrote poetry, made music, danced in the rain, baked a pie, painted anything, fixed something that was broken, kissed a baby, held a cat to your face, hiked up a hill, swam naked, walked at sunrise, played the harmonica, talked till dawn, made love for hours on a beach, in the woods, communed with nature, searched for God. When was the last time you sat alone with the silence, traveling to the deepest part of your being? When was the last time you said hello to your soul? When you live as a single-faceted creature, you become deeply mired in matters of the body, money, sex, power, possessions, physical stimulations and satisfactions, security, fame, financial gain. When you live as a dual-faceted creature, you broaden your concerns to include matters of the mind, companionship, creativity, stimulation of new thoughts, new ideas, creation of new goals, new challenges, personal growth. When you live as a three-part being, you come at last into balance with yourself. Your concerns include matters of the soul, spiritual identity, life purpose, relationship to God, path of evolution, spiritual growth, ultimate destiny. As you evolve into higher and higher states of consciousness, you bring into full realization every aspect of your being. Yet evolution does not mean dropping some aspects of self in favor of others. It simply means expanding focus, turning away from almost exclusive involvement with one aspect toward genuine love and appreciation for all aspects.
Then why do so many teachers espouse complete abstinence from sex?
Because they do not believe that humans can achieve a balance. They believe the sexual energy and the energies surrounding otherworldly experiences is too powerful to simply moderate, to bring into balance. They believe abstinence is the only way to spiritual evolution, rather than merely one possible result of it.
Yet isn't it true that some beings who are highly evolved have given up sex?
Not in the classic sense of the words, to give up. It is not a forced letting go of something you still want, but know is no good to have. It's more of a simple releasing, a movement away from, as one pushes oneself away from the second helping of dessert. Not because the dessert is no good. Not even because it's no good for you. But simply because, wonderful as it was, you've had enough. When you can drop your involvement with sex for that reason, you may want to do so. Then again, you may not. You may never decide that you've had enough and may always want this experience in balance with the other experiences of your beingness. That's okay. That's all right. The sexually active are no less qualified for enlightenment, no less spiritually evolved than the sexually inactive. What enlightenment and evolution do cause you to drop is your addiction to sex, your deep need to have the experience, your compulsive behaviors. So too, your preoccupation with money, power, security, possessions, and other experiences of the body will vanish. Yet your genuine appreciation for them will not and should not. Appreciation for all of life is what honors the process I have created. Disdain for life or any of its joys, even the most basic physical ones, is disdain for me, the Creator. For when you call my creation unholy, what do you call me? Yet when you call my creation sacred, you sanctify your experience of it, and me as well. I tell you this, I have created nothing disdainful. And as your Shakespeare said, nothing is evil, lest thinking make it so.